I'd like to call to order the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. Before we get started here, we're going to hold public hearings on House Bill 2958, 2640, and 2154. But first, we are going to work session and vote on House Bill 3093 and 3034. So let me go into a work session on House Bill 3093. Richard, if you could give us a summary.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3093 allows the sponsor of a charter school to terminate the charter of a public charter school for failure of the school to have an audit prepared or for failure to forward the audit information to the Oregon Department of Education. It requires the school district sponsoring the charter school to include information in the annual audit to the Oregon Department of Education as part of an audit report for the school district, and allows the Oregon Department of Education to withhold state school fund payments if the information is not submitted. There are two amendments in front of the committee. The Dash 7 amendments remove specific prohibitions on employment of folks involved with virtual public charter schools, and the Dash 8s specify audit report requirements detailing the process for the termination of a charter, and it also resolves a potential conflict with the existing legislation. The committee has previously heard this bill on April 30th and May 16th.
Okay, this is the charter school bill. It's got a couple amendments. Thanks again, Senator Roblin, yep, and Senator Canope for doing the work group to find consensus on that one. And then we put your previous bill into the Dash 7. So,
correct.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 7 amendment to House Bill 3093.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 3093. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objections? Seeing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendment into Senate Bill 3093.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 8s into Senate Bill 3093. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objections? Seeing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 3093 as amended by the Dash 7 and Dash 8 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3093 as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objection? Seeing none. House Bill 3093 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Senator Roblin will be the carrier. Close the work session on House Bill 3093, and I will open a work session on House Bill 3034. Richard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3034A requires Oregon pre-kindergarten programs that receive grants from the Department of Education to be subject to public meetings law and applies public records law to meetings minutes and, or other records created or presented at meetings. The committee last heard this bill on May 16th.
Okay, we didn't have the fiscal papers in then, so we'll look for a motion here.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3034A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3034A to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3034A moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Cruz, would you be so kind to be the carrier on this bill?
I don't know how kind it is, but yeah.
All right. Senator Beyer, would you like to vote on?
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended to allow Senator Beyer to vote on House Bill 3093.
Senator Cruz moves to change the rule, suspend the rules to allow Senator Beyer to vote on House Bill 3093 as amended. Any discussion, objection? Seeing none. So ordered. Senator Beyer, how do you vote on House Bill 3093 as amended? Beyer votes aye. All right. We are out of work sessions. We are into public hearings. Let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2958A. Richard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2958A requires community colleges to make specified information available for distribution to public school students in grades 11 and 12 annually. It requires representatives of the State Board of Education and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to meet regularly for the purpose of improving coordination between public secondary schools and community colleges. It declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2013. There is one set of amendments the committee has been presented with, the dash A2s, and those make changes to some of the substantive language to be congruent with Oregon Education Investment Board recommendations. The committee last heard this bill on May the 9th.
Representative Comp, will you come forward? And you brought the dash 2 amendments?
A2s, yeah.
Dash A2s.
Thank you, Chair Haas and committee members. For the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22. That's Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and North Salem. Richard just basically gave you my testimony. It is a bill that is to help us reach our 40-40-20 goals, and that is to really help support high school students, particularly in 11th and 12th grade, but anybody that's learning at their own rate and speed, if they know what community college classes are available within their school, within their boundaries. A good example of this is the Saban Center, where they really have a system in place to make sure that students know what opportunities that they have in order to get credit, and that they bus students to the Saban Skills Center from five different school districts in order to get to be part of these programs, that again, so they can get college credit. This is something that does not happen in every community. It happens in many, and so this would keep us consistent throughout the state. And I'm available for any questions. And yes, there are some. There is an amendment. That's a different one. But yes, anyway, there's amendments coming on this bill, and I just appreciate your consideration and support.
Questions? Okay. Thank you, Rep. Carl.
Thank you.
And we do expect to have some more amendments on this bill, so those amendments aren't ready, so.
Right.
If no one else is here to testify on this amendment to House Bill 2958,
Senator Cruz. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I made a commitment to Representative Comp that these secret amendments that are coming, we need to kind of, well, you might be able to speak to it. Some of the issues around those would have to do with the land use process and permitting and things like that, which at this point in time we don't know, but which are important.
Okay. So, well, with John Wyckoff is here from the community colleges.
Chair, House members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff, legislative director for the Oregon Community College Association, and the dash or the A2s in front of you came at the request of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, who was working with Representative Comp to make sure that the information being asked for was information that existed and was available. So that is the origin of the dash 2s. We worked with Representative Comp and appreciate her working with us.
We're more concerned with the dash 3s that we have not seen yet. So.
Just wanted to provide that for the dash 2s.
Hold on, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my only thing is I agree for the need for this, because I think there is it's kind of up and down with respect to the relationship K-12 schools have with their community colleges. Some work really, really well, others not as well. I'm trying to figure out how to make that work. And more importantly, with a lot of the decisions moving to HEC and away from the K-12 board, there's no relationship. They'll just be off on their own trying to be like the big guys, and we were concerned that they won't want to continue to play with those of us that were in the small things. So we think that this is important. So, but I do want to look at what's happening with the other amendments.
Thank you, John. All right. Thank you, Rep. Comp. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2958A and open a public hearing on House Bill 2640. Richard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2640B adds two members to the Oregon Education Investment Board. It requires the governor to consult with the oldest nonprofit network of parents that provide statewide representation of parents and with the organization representing school district boards in consideration the appointment of these two new positions. Declares an emergency effective on passage.
All right, well, let's start off with Lori Wimmer, Otto Schell, and Betsy Miller. We have Rep. Johnson coming too.
Great. So. You want him to go first?
No, go ahead.
Good afternoon, committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer representing the Oregon Education Association, one of the requesters of the bill before you today. 2640 would add two missing voices on the Oregon Education Investment Board, that of a school board member and that of a parent who is a member of the oldest and largest nonprofit network, or parent network rather, in Oregon, which is typically your PTA or PTO. And as the OEIB continues to move forward, it needs to hear from a broader diversity of voices than has been the case in the past. Just as when you make public policy, you hear from a diversity of voices, we believe that the best public policy is that which is shaped by diversity of opinion and thought. We originally requested that a parent member be added to the OEIB because we felt that they were, after all, the consumers of public education, and they ought to be key partners in determining how our system is structured, funded, and governed. So once the bill was heard in House Education Committee, the House determined that a similar bill, which you'll be hearing about from Representative Johnson and from my colleagues here, should be merged so that we create two new positions on the OEIB that includes both of these entities that have been missing from the conversation so far in the last couple of years. Some districts, we want to note, don't actually have a chapter of the PTA, which is our piece of the bill. But that does not mean that an interested parent who is has a student in any sort of public school, charter school, otherwise, would be precluded from being considered by the governor for appointment under this bill because anyone can join the PTA, as you'll hear from Mr. Schell, and as an individual could potentially become that nominee for that one position. The goal here is to be more inclusive, not less. Thank you.
Chair Haas and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Miller-Jones, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon School Boards Association. I'm here today to ask for your support for House Bill 2640, which would ensure that 1,400 locally elected school board members have a seat at the table and a vote on the deliberations of the Oregon Education Investment Board. With the creation of the OEIB, Oregon's taken a major step towards an integrated system of education from birth through college. I'll admit that many of our members were skeptical, some still are, of the OEIB concept and the 40-40-20 goals. Too many of them have lived through other major education reform, SIM-CAM, NCLB, and we're rightly concerned that this was just another education fad that would fail to take hold for lack of funding or political will. That viewpoint has changed in the past 18 months. I would say that many of our members are now cautiously optimistic that Oregon's education system is on the right track at the state level. They see a governor and legislature that understand the financial crisis in our schools and how this has decimated our ability to provide the best education for our students. Our members have been impressed with Dr. Crew's willingness to engage our organization and meet with our members, and Rob Saxton has reinvigorated the work of the Department of Education, so there's reason for optimism. Currently, OEIB is made up of 12 members appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. The current board includes teachers, superintendents, union leaders, business leaders, professors, academics, and a representative of social services nonprofits. So it is a diverse and well-qualified body. But being able to come to the table and share your thoughts, opinions, and concerns, as our board members currently do, it's not the same as having an actual seat at the table and a vote on the decisions that are made. Right now, we believe that's a glaring omission from the board. The voice and vote of this integral education stakeholder group is not at the table. OEIB does not include a member who serves as a locally elected school board member. House Bill 2640 proposes adding two additional board positions, ensuring space is filled by a member of a school board and a parent. We believe that with education as the single largest item in the state budget and the largest entity under the authority of the OEIB, with achievement compacts, the most important area of work under OEIB, and these compacts are between the state of Oregon and locally elected school board members, then it's the school board that's responsible to set and approve those goals. It's very important that board members be part of the decision-making of the OEIB. That's why school board members across Oregon are asking you to make sure they're represented at the table as a full voting member and partner in the OEIB. Their insights and perspectives, their participation in that decision-making about education policy plays out on the ground. They participate in the decision. As you know, those who participate are more engaged in the implementation. So we believe it's essential in the debate about how to reach our shared 40-40-20 goal by 2025. So I thank you for the consideration, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Otto. Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Otto Schell. I'm with the Oregon PTA. I have the distinct notoriety of having attended a majority of the OEIB meetings, so I have a little bit of a sense of the work that's done there. And I agree with Betsy's characterization that there are important voices that need to be heard at the OEIB and not just heard in a brief public testimony aspect. History of the PTA is that we're in our 150th year. To put that in a frame of perspective, Teddy Roosevelt's in the photos of the first meeting that was held for PTA, what became PTA in New York City. We represent a wide range of communities and people, and I think, as Senator Roblin described in the House hearings, this is not a PTA seat per se, but rather looking to PTA to try to find a parent who can represent a broad selection of voices in the parent community. In addition to going to a majority of the OEIB meetings, I've also attended a handful of the forums that were held. And the kinds of things that we heard at the forums that were held around the state were definitely different than the kinds of conversations that you hear at the OEIB. I think those voices are really important, and that's why we're here to support House Bill 2640, and we hope that you'll also vote to support that. Thank you.
Thank you. Otto, let me first of all clear up, and maybe you can fill us in on how we got to this language of the oldest organization in the state as opposed to just PTA.
Senator Roblin, do you want to take
yeah,
that on?
Yeah. It's and I'm one of the co-sponsors of this bill. There was a lot of conversations from chalkboard, from all sorts of other people saying they wanted to be the one that represented the parent. And I think that part of this comes from, I believe that you want to have organizations that have staying power and have been around. And the truth is, the PTA, even though they, you know, in our town we haven't had PTAs, we've had other kinds of organizations, I still believe that it is the organization that has consistently been there over that period of time and has never given up their mission of representing parents when it comes to education. And so I thought it was a good way of putting it and showing the distinction that all of those groups are great, they all have great parents, whoever they are, and they're all working for somewhat the common cause. But when it comes to, if we're really going to do the OEIB and do it right, I think a group that's showed its willingness to do that, and I have to say for going to all of the meetings without a vote and being there, that shows that same persistence. And, you know, I also, if you look, you can be an independent member of PTA from anywhere you want to be. So it's an organization that allows everyone to be a part of it, and it's an easy application to get involved with. And so it is the place. In OEIB, every one of these kind of seats at the table have a constituency group that recommends a name to the governor, or a group of names, and then the governor picks and they get sent to the Senate. And so we felt it was important when we were doing the bill to make sure that we had an organization who would be responsible for finding out that person who could be that voice, and then having them have a place where they have to report back. Because when you go, each of these other seats has a constituency that they have to kind of come back to and be responsive to. And this allows us to have that responsive voice in a group that I think has represented parents in schools for a long time. And I appreciate looking at the history. So part of why it's there.
All right.
A further explanation of your question, and more to the point, is LC does not like to name specific organizations
I know.
In statute. So what they do is they craft a definition that pretty much does everything but name them. But that so that's the reason for that language.
And we take that assignment seriously, too, and that's why I'm here today to say we understand the gravity of the task, and we're up for that. We also want to use the senator's statement as our recruiting tool, but and we thank you for the kind words. So.
Let me ask you a sort of a more serious question, is why these two slots, why not higher education? Why not someone from higher education or Head Start or...
Mr. Chair, I will answer that if I may. We believe that those are seats that are represented in the current configuration of the board. These were the ones that were the missing seats. We think all of those voices are important. We would agree with you that higher ed and early learning, Head Start, all of those are important voices. We have a member, too. There's one classroom teacher out of 13 on the board. So, but these were two missing voices.
Further questions?
Not a question, more of a statement. And so our representative's here, so I won't have to go back. But for me, it's making having, if we're going to keep OEIB, and there's some of us who may not feel that that's the best thing, but if it's going to be the organization that we think it can be to make it work, it has to have those different voices. And so when I was looking at it, I didn't actually originally think about the school boards as much. That came later. The bill that I first had was the one that just had the Parents Association. To have credibility amongst all the groups, you've got to make sure all the groups are there, because it's easy to be on the outside taking snapshots when they don't do things if you don't have a seat at that table. And if you really want it to work, in my opinion, you'd better get the people who are going to make it work at the table. And if the parents aren't part of the group that has to make it work, I don't know who is. And truthfully, the school board members aren't a part of it. Yeah. They also are the integral part of making it work. So if you really want the system with OEIB to work, in my opinion, then you'd better have those people who have institutionally the reason to make it work be there. And so to me, that's kind of why this is there and why it's really important to get it institutionalized. I think if you leave them out, it leaves a lot of room for external sniping and other kinds of stuff. About, you know, if we'd been there, we could have probably pointed that out to you. It's always second-guessing the people, and if you, even when you're on, you want to feel like you want to do that from time to time. But if you're out, it's very easy to be the people on the outside taking pot shots and making sure it doesn't work. And I just think that it's better to have the tent include them first, and then they have a responsibility to help make it work.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rep. Johnson is here on this bill.
Thank you for your forbearance. Days like this, it'd be good to have two of me, but I'm probably the only guy in the room that feels that way. Chair Hass, members of the committee, thanks very much for your time. Mark Johnson, State Rep for House District 52, and I am here to advocate on behalf of including an OSBA member on the OEIB. One of the reasons why I set off on this course to become a state legislator was because in my other life as a school board member, I've been on the receiving end of some interesting policies.
So, is that a conflict of interest or something? He's probably hoping for this position.
We all wear many hats, do we not? On the receiving end of some policies that, while well-intended, were simply not very practicable or easily implementable at the local level. As we move into the next generation of education and education reform, specifically in Oregon, and in the role that the Oregon Education Investment Board does play, and we'll see how long they do play that role within the state, I think it's important that the perspective of a school board member is at the table. Again, I know I'm also an advocate in this building for not creating purely stakeholder boards, if you will, because I do believe those can be problematic. But in this case, my contention would be that in this day when we are talking about the creation of achievement compacts and then the implementation of achievement compacts, that that whole framework is actually carried out at the local level, and we need to have the perspective of those folks who are actually at ground zero, if you will, where these new education reforms are going to be carried out, where we have expectations for performance, for holding people accountable for performance, and so forth. So I think there's a valuable role to make sure that, as I think Senator Roblin was talking earlier, that we have that input there at the point in time that these ideas are being considered and vetted and then hopefully implemented successfully so that we can, you know, really move this state forward. But with 196 or 97 school districts across the state of Oregon, it's important to, and obviously there are at least one of those in every legislative district, I know that. We can pull it back out. I do think it's important that that representation is at the table. So that would be my contention. So thank you, Chair Hass. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Actually, Representative, I think I've got over 20 in my Senate district. So.
When we're not talking about consolidation here today.
No.
Oh, an amendment.
No. We ain't going there.
Been there, done that.
Yes.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, so you sponsored the bill that had this, the other one, and they were put together and they went into this bill. And we don't have you up as a chief co-sponsor. Did you sign in when you needed to?
Sometimes things happen in the fine print there. I was a co-carrier, but, you know, we're not about fame and glory. Okay. It's about results.
I'll see, it's different over here.
Yeah, I know. We get things done on our side.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I'm glad you said different and not better. So we. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben Cannon.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, for your record, Ben Cannon, Governor's Education Policy Advisor. Here today to express on behalf of the governor deep concerns and reservations about House Bill 2640. I don't think this will surprise those of you who have been a part of the creation of the OEIB and followed the governor's position on board composition issues generally. I first want to underscore and express my appreciation for the folks who have preceded me and talked about the need for an inclusive process of education, reform, change, whatever you want to call it. To be effective and to be successful, it has to be inclusive. There has to be ownership, not just at, you know, the state level, but at the local level among the people who are involved and critical for implementing anything that we intend to do differently. And that includes parents, it includes teachers, it includes school board members, it includes administrators, early education, higher education, so on and so forth. But I do want to describe for you and just really point out for you the way that Senate Bill 909 and current law treats the composition of the Oregon Education Investment Board as a stakeholder-neutral board, and that is by design. So current law creates a 13-member OEIB, the governor to chair, and 12 appointed members appointed or selected by the governor, confirmed by the Senate. The governor is required only to meet the following criteria. Number one, that he submit names and that are confirmed that represent, ensure that at least one member from each congressional district is on the board. And number two, that the governor receive advice from the Speaker of the House and the Senate President in the selection of those names. There are not stakeholder slots on this board. We are not under any obligation to appoint a teacher, a higher education administrator, a student, a parent, obviously, an early educator, or a business person. Of course, the OEIB and its membership does reflect people who come from a variety of walks of life, including former experience as school board members, including many parents, including teachers and administrators and others who have been involved in education but one way or another. But the notion of this not being a stakeholder board was very intentional. It is the Oregon Education Investment Board. And the notion was that this board would provide for the governor and for the legislature advice relative to strategic investment, strategic deployment of the state's resources for education to achieve our education goals. Those are hard conversations that have not been and should not be about institutional interest, one or another. And it is important that in those conversations, Oregonians feel like their role as involvement as sort of taxpayers, as investors, if you will, in the education system are represented. And so it is, again, by design, a stakeholder-neutral board. I hesitate to propose that if you amend this bill, you consider an amendment that does define other stakeholder slots. But it does strike me as anomalous that this bill would create only two stakeholder slots, one for a parent, presumably a K-12 parent, another for a school board member of a K-12 school district on a P-20 board. And it would certainly beg the question for me and for the governor, what about early education? What about higher education? What about students? What about administrators? What about faculty that would not be or not have any guarantee of being represented on the OEIB? And I hope you would take that under consideration, even as I hesitate to suggest trying to draft an amendment that would somehow reflect that entire P20 continuum. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions. Did want to put on the record the governor's very significant reservations about this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? So the policy issue here really is a composition of sort of citizens appointed sort of at large by a governor versus some very prescribed slots. If you can do one or the other, and if you're going to do prescribed slots on a P20 board, then let's fill in the slots for P20, not just K-12.
Mr. Chair, that's right. I realize this session has a risk, for me at least, of being defined as a session about board composition, which would be unfortunate. This committee, of course, has engaged in that very directly in your discussion of the composition of institutional boards for universities. And just as this committee concluded that a stakeholder-neutral approach to generally to university governance is appropriate, so would we advise that this is the model to use in this particular instance as well.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, well, but if you want something where we further define the slots, I would suggest there's a potential referral in the Senate Rules Committee that would take care of that. So,
Senator Rowland?
We've had that conversation.
No, my only thing is I think that that's true. I think that I understand what he's talking about. I still, when I look at the enterprise that we have, that we call education in our state, And I look at how it got formed, and the board was set up, and then I realized that much of what came out of OEIB was directed at K-12. I mean, when it comes to compacts, they've been extended to other places, but they're kind of working their way into that in higher ed and so on. Not having had a voice in that early ones directly from the school boards or directly from PTA's parent groups, I think was not helpful in having the board, you know, come out, keep working better. And I think you can have a lot of discretion, but I think there's a couple of places that it's important to have less discretion. Even though there will be, I mean, the governor still picks the person from whence they come. And I think those voices are really important. And I know that some of them came, and to OEIB's credit, they came, they weren't voting members, but they got to give a lot of input. So that's been a positive part of the whole experience. And I think that from my perspective, if we want to keep this going, we've got to acknowledge some of that. I don't know that we need to do each and every one on the board, because I think there can be other reasons why that's not important. And I would hope that the government would think about this and realize that having a little bit of mix with the two can be helpful in the long run in having it survive and prosper. So to me, that's why this is important. But I do understand his concerns.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
Thanks.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2640 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2154A. Richard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2154A requires the Board of Education of each community college district and the president of each public university to form Achievement Compact Advisory Committees. It clarifies with whom open communications are made regarding achievement compacts and declares an emergency effective on passage.
All right, more board composition discussion. A Representative Dembrow is here.
Thank you, Senator Hess, committee members. Michael Dembrow, House District 45, Northeast Portland, out to Park Rose. Here to talk to you about a topic that's very closely related to the one that you just addressed, and it really goes back to, I think, to Senate Bill 909 as well, where in the haste and tumult of that session, the achievement compacts were created, and the achievement compact advisory committees were created. And there were, in the haste of doing that, there was, I believe, an error made in the way that post-secondary was treated with the advisory committees as opposed to K-12. The bill had two sections, one which guaranteed open communication with stakeholders, including parents, et cetera. And in that section, community colleges and universities were included, even though really we don't want parents involved in that process. So that was a section that really should have just been focused on K-12. Then there was another section in which the advisory committees were created, and that only spoke to K-12. But clearly, I believe the intent was that the advisory committees would be for the entire educational continuum. And so the Higher Ed Committee had this bill drafted that would correct that. And what it would do is to have at each of the colleges and universities would, just as in the K-12 school districts, would have an achievement compact advisory committee that would comprise the major stakeholders, students, faculty, administrators, staff, that would make recommendations about the development of the achievement compacts and would, kind of track the metrics of the achievement compacts and advise the administration accordingly. So that's simply what this bill is. We heard it on the House side. We got testimony from colleges and universities that there was concern that this might be duplicative of committees that already existed at the colleges and universities that did similar kinds of work. And so we included a section here in Section 4, Section 1, Sub 4 on the front page that would, that would exempt. That is, if there were already a standing committee, that could serve as the Achievement Compact Advisory Committee. There was another problem where the language suggested that the advisory committee would be implementing the achievement compacts. Well, clearly that's the job of the administration. This is an advisory committee to advise the president or the board to, about it. That's essentially what the bill does. It takes out that the language that that speaks to parents being involved in the communication stream, and it changes it to say that communication will be with those as appropriate for the type of education entity represented by the governing body of the education entity. In that case, parents would really not be appropriate, but certainly, students would be, community stakeholders would be, et cetera. So anyway, essentially, as I say, I think this is a simple fix to something that was inadvertent in the rush to develop the earlier bill, and I would urge you to support it. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Bumber? Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bridget Burns from OUS and John Wyckoff.
Good Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Bridget Burns, Chief of Staff for the Oregon University System. Happy to offer you some comments today in reference to House Bill 2154. But on the whole, what I would tell you is the university system has done such extensive work to vet these achievement compacts through every avenue possible, and there have been so many different levels of public input and vetting and debating of these compacts. It is our perspective that it is time for us to stop debating the achievement compacts and start getting on to achieving them. It takes such work to formulate a clear target, which is essentially what these are, and the way our academic calendar works, we would appreciate the opportunity to be able to start implementing. But the more that we add additional layers of review and scrutiny, while we believe in transparency, we don't believe it is necessary. And so we appreciate the assistance of Representative Dembro making it so that if we have checked this box, that essentially it won't require us to create an additional work group. I just wanted to give you a heads up that we have had so many different levels. First, the provosts of each of our institutions worked with their campuses to have a collection of either their cabinet or constituents to come together to come up with their campus's version. Then they brought it onto the Provost Council. The Provost Council brought theirs to the State Board of Higher Education, which we have two members of, two students and two faculty members there. Students and faculty are every meeting giving public testimony and can weigh in on decisions made at that board, and those are always in public. There were also another layer where the Academic Strategies Committee reviewed, debated, and vetted these achievement compacts where there were students and faculty present. So we feel very confident that this decision, the decisions about setting these metrics, have not just been inclusive. We believe that it's time for us to move forward and start working on them. Keep in mind that we also still do KPMs, and we still develop a variety of metrics for the presidents. When you do a presidential evaluation, the way that we do that is a variety of different metrics that they needed to achieve that year. So we feel very confident that the data and information is there, and that we've done all the involvement possible to include every constituency. And we feel very confident with the outcome. But again, the longer that we take in these processes, the less time we have to actually work on achieving the outcomes that we've identified. So that's our perspective. We're happy with to answer any questions, and we're excited to be able to start working on these.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff, Legislative Director for the Oregon Community College Association, and wanted to share a few concerns with this approach as well. But first, do want to start by thanking Representative Dembro for changes that were made on the House side. Our primary concerns with the original legislation were some language that was included around the Achievement Compact Advisory Committees being responsible for implementing the compact. That language concerned us and is no longer there, so we appreciate having that. We thought that got into the job of running the college, and so that had been removed. And on a more basic level, I think our boards questioned whether this needs to be in statute. We agree that every college had and needs to have a process that includes faculty and students and broader members of the community. I mean, we have colleges that would want to probably include members of the business communities that they work with directly on a lot of the coursework that we do. And in the original bill, felt that it was far too prescriptive and sort of micromanaged that process. The changes that have been made allow for if there is a process that already includes the represented employee groups based on the current bill and students, that you can use that process. We appreciate that. We think that's a good step. We don't want to just have to create a parallel or duplicative process, and would like some latitude if we take this approach on how that may be shaped and may be broadened. I think finally, our board's probably preference would be, if we're going to move in this approach, something that is even a bit less prescriptive than this currently is, that would require us to include faculty and students. That's something our colleges believe they will do anyway and believe they should and do in their budget creation process and in other campus processes. And then it doesn't go beyond that, but say you should have a process. It should include faculty and students and report back to the OAIB to make sure you did that. I think we would prefer an approach like that, but do appreciate the changes that have been made to make this, I think, more workable for the way our campuses are governed locally by elected boards.
Okay. Appreciate that. Any questions, Senator Roebling?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my feeling has been on this bill that we kind of set it in motion last time, and we went very quickly. And we didn't have anything in there, so the universities and the community colleges went off and did their own thing. And I would rather take the time to look at what they did. I haven't heard from anyone that said that they didn't involve faculty and teachers in making those decisions. And maybe there are unique ways, and maybe we will find more about how to do it right by letting at least one group in the organization go about trying to find the best solution. And then maybe out of that we can design something over time. Because I think that every community college and others that I know took it seriously and went about going out and figuring out how to do that. And many of them had their own senates and, you know, faculty senate, faculty whatever. They had other groups, and they vetted it in lots of different ways. And so I personally don't think we need this right now. I'm not saying we shouldn't come back with something that prescribes it a little more later. But right now, I'm happy to hear both the university system and the community college system say we feel that our faculty are important to get the information from, our students are important to get the information from. That's what I would have hoped that they would say. And it's also, I think, an important part of what we need to do if we're going to move forward, because they are the group that has to implement and receive whatever it is that we're going to be doing. And working together is the only way you're going to get there. So I appreciate what they did without the direction. And I think maybe it's best to leave it that way for a little while until we know a little bit more. And then if we need to come back and do something, I'd be more inclined to do it. That's just my own personal opinion.
Yeah. No, I appreciated what you said, Ms. Burns, about it's time to get, we're done setting up. Let's let these compacts work. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, following up on Senator Roblin, we do share a community college that is, community involvement is massive in their work. And but if you look at Southwestern and then you look at Umpqua, they're doing basically the same sort of thing, but they're doing it in a different way.
Right.
You know, how they involve the community and how they involve all the stakeholders. And I guess, Ms. Chair, I'm a little reluctant to create a box on the front end of this that may be hard for that local efforts to fit into. So. We're moving awfully fast on a lot of things. Maybe some things we shouldn't move quite so fast on.
I mean, we have university boards we're setting up. I mean, they have a lot of work to do if they're going to be successful at all this different stuff. And giving a little room to play in that to get it right is, I think, important. So, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Andrea Cooper, Bill Martinez, Michelle Martin, and your team.
Chair House, members of the committee, for the record, Andrea Cooper with the Oregon Education Association. We represent 42,000 educators, including 4,000 community college faculty and staff at 10 of the 17 campuses. We wanted to share our support for House Bill 2154A today. I have two faculty members here who I want to defer most of my time to, but I wanted to just provide two comments. I think we do see this bill first as a fix. I think right now the statute is a bit confusing about what P20 means when there's not consistency in the structures and endeavors that are happening at the K-12 level and post-secondary. And I'm the first to acknowledge that there are cultural differences between both, but I think ultimately collaboration is always in the best interest of students at every level. And I also wanted to note that we agree that it is time to move forward, and point out that this bill is not just about a committee nitpicking what the achievement compact looks like, that they are asked to make recommendations, but this committee is also charged with figuring out how do we actually achieve those targets. In our view, if we're going to set targets to increase the number of associate degrees and credentials to reach 40-40-20, then it is absolutely essential that faculty are at the table, and most importantly, that students are at the table, because they provide a voice as to why are we not achieving those goals yet, what changes can we make. We did work with OCCA and others who had concerns with this bill to make it less prescriptive, to find that balance of ensuring the structure is in place but not telling them exactly what that structure needs to look like. So with that, however, I will turn it over to two faculty members who can share their perspective. There are some committees that are meeting, I think, are productive.
but we'd love to see more of that happening at every campus.
Thank you. Chairman Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Martinez. I am an economics instructor at LCC, Lane Community College. I'm the chair of the Learning Council, which makes recommendations to the administration on academic affairs. I'm also a member of the Lane Community College Achievement Compact Task Force, which I believe is unique in the state. And I'm here to speak in support of 2154. I'd like to make 3 points. First of all, at LCC, the Achievement Compact Task Force has worked extremely successfully, working between staff, managers, and faculty. It's got three managers on it, two faculty members, one staff member. We are intending to expand it to include students. We have, in the past 2 years, thank you very much. I want to Marco Rubio here. over the last 2 years, we've been very, very successful in establishing the parameters and the protocols used by LCC to identify and develop the targets and the projections, both last year and this year. And this is an experience that I would strongly recommend to be shared throughout the state. I'd like to make an additional point, which is that there is a logical, I hesitate to use the word flaw, but confusion, gap in the Achievement Compact legislation and orientation in general. And that is that there is no mechanism between the establishment of the completion targets and the actual behaviors, activities, outcomes in the classroom or in courses. And the only mechanism that exists between those is, in fact, the faculty. Faculty have exclusive rights and responsibilities to establish methodologies, techniques, technologies, assessments, et cetera, in the classroom, and to evaluate the performance of students. So if you really want to increase success and completion and performance long-term at a level that is going to be sustained, you have to include faculty. Faculty have to be involved in the establishment of those targets and the establishment of the mechanisms that are going to be used for those targets and the assessment and evaluation of those targets. To bring them in at the end or partway through is just going to confound things, and especially with the number of educational entities out there, it's not moving the system in a unified way forward. Finally, I'd like to point out that we've already had unintended consequences due to lack of faculty engagement. On the LCC campus, since the passage of the legislation, we've had two managers at two different times in two different departments tell their faculty members that they were no longer allowed to give failing grades to students. If faculty had been engaged and involved in the discussion early on in those departments about what, in fact, Achievement Compacts and the completion agenda was, how to establish those goals and how to establish the mechanisms to achieve those goals, such an error would have been avoided, and likely we would have incorporated some suggestions from faculty that would have had a far higher rate of probability of success than simply outlawing failing students. with all due respect to previous statements, I don't believe the legislation anywhere prohibits or blocks any educational entity to move forward on the Achievement Compacts. We certainly have at LCC. I think the legislation here is not about obstruction. I think it's about inclusion and moving things forward more rapidly. And if the OUS system would like to speak with LCC about how to move forward on that, I'm sure we can do that.
Chair Hash, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michelle Martin. I'm a mathematics instructor at Portland Community College, Sylvania campus. I'm here today to speak as a faculty member in support of HB 2154, a bill on Achievement Compact advisory committees. As you've heard today, unlike K through 12, post-secondary faculty, staff, and students do not currently have a guaranteed place at the table when crafting achievement compacts. HB 2154 would recognize the vital role of faculty, staff, and students when crafting achievement compacts. Achievement compacts are going to help colleges across the state focus on the priorities of the educational system by defining the smaller steps necessary to move toward 40-40-20. And of course, resource allocation will be an important discussion for how to achieve those goals. I believe it's really critical for faculty, staff, and students to have a broad view of what is happening across the nation, across the state, and also what's happening within the institution. And supporting this will help guide that. In discussion of achievement compacts in 40-40-20, it's all about increasing student success. And as a faculty member and also as the chair of PCC's Learning Assessment Council, I am certainly very familiar with and interested in student success and increasing student success. So I'd just like to share a story a little bit, a quick story about how PCC's assessment process has developed. I believe it will be illustrate a point. So the regional accreditation agency that we have for colleges and universities in this area requires that there is an assessment for student learning that's focused on improvement. PCC has done this where they ask faculty to look for areas of weakness in student learning, collect data, analyze the data, make appropriate changes, and repeat this annually. Before I was at PCC, assessment work was under administration, led by administration, and it never really got off the ground. Our Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs took this work from administration and had faculty in charge. This was a brave and wise choice. This is the fourth year that PCC has had a faculty-led and faculty-driven assessment process. And we've had wonderful success guiding the college to meet the accreditation standards on assessment, including a removal of a recommendation, a really scary recommendation that had the words hasten your progress in it. It is important to realize that assessment is not something that faculty often get excited about. I do personally, but most don't. It's not a warm and fuzzy topic for many faculty. And the way that we're asking faculty to do this work requires a steep learning curve. They're having to learn how to collect data at the program and discipline level, analyze it, look for changes, and go forward. Many faculty don't have the mathematical background for data analysis, which complicates the situation. But they're doing the work, and they're able to mold it in a meaningful way to see how it relates to their passion, which is student learning. I believe the reason why this work has been successful is that faculty have been involved. It's some different when administration or some outside force is telling you to do something than if you have faculty at the table sharing with other faculty. So I hope this illustrates the point that educational professionals, staff, and students are a vital link for education reform and accountability. And I believe that to have success with achievement compacts and to move the state toward 40-40-20, we need your support for HB 2154. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Cruz?
Yeah, not a question, just a comment. The problem with this is the objective here is absolutely fine, but the problem is the achievement compacts themselves. And you know, all you have to do is go to K-12. When OEIB said, give us achievement compacts, and they did, and basically they were told these aren't good enough, we'll tell you what your benchmarks are going to be. This is moving the university system and community colleges into an entirely top-down system where they will be told what their objectives will be rather than developing them organically. So it's not what you're trying to set up here that I object to. It's the process you're putting yourself into that I find troublesome.
Comment on the comment?
No comment.
Senator Rublin?
What I would say is it may have been a mistake, it may have been oversight, whatever, with them not being put into the bill last time. But From your testimony, it sounds like, at least in your two instances, in your two institutions, people came to the conclusion pretty clearly that if they went to work, it was going to have to involve faculty. And even when they made what I would have said was a grievous error, in your case, they came to the conclusion fairly quickly it was a grievous error. So, because they do know and they do value the instructors. I mean, the truth is, I think that oftentimes if you look at the setup in the university and higher ed system, the value placed on instructors is much higher than we do in education institutions with teachers in K-12, with your personal responsibility or the other things that you get to do. I appreciate that, because I think that the only people in the system that really make a difference in K-12 are the teachers, because that's where the teachers meet the kids. That's the most important part of the whole system. It is all the way through. But sometimes organically doing it and recognizing it is a better deal than being told what to do. And what I hear from both of you is that in your institutions, it organically worked. And maybe it was because you already had the relationships and people understood there were already institutions that could help do that. But it sounds like you both had, your faculty had a fairly good place at the table with respect to these compacts. Is that true, or am I misreading that?
I don't think faculty at PCC have been deeply involved with the compacts. I've done a little bit of work with it. It's not gone deeply enough, in my opinion.
Okay.
I'm going to be a little bit circumspect here because of internal politics and things. let me say that the faculty and staff lobbied very hard the administration to establish this structure and had immediate support from the Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs, who established the compact in February of 2012, so relatively quickly, and appointed it. That Vice President is no longer at the college.
Okay. And
if I can offer, Chair Hassan, Senator Robin, we also kind of informally, I think AFT and OEA surveyed our membership to get feedback on what was happening. And the results of that survey is why we worked with Representative Denver on this bill, because it's been varied involvement. I think they are prime examples of faculty actually having a seat. Other examples, it's done over email or the compact sent. Do you like it? What would you change? Other examples where there's no student involvement at all was another kind of overwhelming piece of feedback that they wanted students at that table and wasn't there. So our solution was really, again, trying to find that balance of putting a system that was required statewide but not making it too restrictive so that the good work and the varied work that's happening can continue and it doesn't slow down the process.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. My concern is that we might have someone retire. And then once we lose that person, the faculty voice could evaporate. And I'd like to have it written where it's going to be included. It's expected.
I will just say that having been an administrator and been in a school and having the opportunity to work with my faculty and all the people there, those are always risks, even if you put it in statute. And you know that, too, because you've had to fight those battles over time. And so what it comes down to is the ability to build a culture that won't accept that kind of thing. And I think, you know, faculties and community colleges and universities have done a better job of that than we have in schools just because of the sense of it and some of the opportunities that you have with respect to your academic freedoms and stuff that you have in your institutions. It's sometimes harder, because I agree. I mean, the change of anybody can make real differences in how they interact with the faculty and so on. So it's building that culture, and sometimes we hurt it by the structures we put in place. If the structure's bad, and I'm not sure we know what the best structure is yet, so that's what makes me really concerned. Because I absolutely agree that we will only meet the compact goals or whatever we set them at if we are working together to get there, where the students see that goal is an appropriate one for them and the faculty understand that they have a responsibility to help those students achieve those goals. That's the only time it ever works. and that we get the resources to the teachers who need it for the students at the appropriate times. And that's what the system needs to do. And I worry we put too many places, too many cogs and wheels in the place that we can't get the resources at the place where you need them as quick as we need them. So that's a concern I will always have, and I keep watching. But and I appreciate another math person. That's really a great thing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We'll close public hearing on House Bill 2154, and that clears up our agenda today. I do want to announce that we will be carrying over House Bill 2958, 2640, 2154 at another time. So, with no other business before us, we are adjourned.